As we pick up this week, we're starting in Daniel chapter 2, and the year is 604 B.C. I just love to have these visuals. Nebuchadnezzar is the king. Nebuchadnezzar is the king of Babylon, and the year before, he has gone into the southern kingdom and taken over the southern kingdom. Actually, his father died the year before, and he became the king of Babylon the year before also. And in that time, he also becomes the king over the Assyrian Empire, taking the Assyrian Empire away from the world into the Babylonian Empire, is now the powerhouse of the world. He took over Egypt. He took over Syria. He took over what we would call Turkey. He has it all under his control. He controls everything in the known world at this point in time. And in the year before our lesson today, he also took out of the southern kingdom young men who were without defect. They had no cuts on them, no bruises, no unusual markings. They were handsome, according to chapter 1. He had his men take those young boys and take them over to Babylon and put them in a school so that they could learn to be servants in his royal court. For 1 year, Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego, and a whole host of more boys from the southern kingdom are in that school. It is a three-year program to learn how to speak the language of the Chaldeans, to learn how to be magicians, conjurers, sorcerers, and of course, eventually, Chaldeans themselves. Chaldean is the word that means the teachers of the magicians, the teachers of the Chaldeans, of the conjurers and the teachers of the sorcerers. They are the wisest men that live in the Babylonian Empire, and I, to my wonderment, wonder why in the world the king of Babylon, of the Chaldeans, they were cousins of the southern kingdom. Yeah, they're cousins by blood. Why in the world they would take boys who are 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, maybe up to 25, out of the southern kingdom and take them over to the Babylonian kingdom and expect them to, here's a Texas word, jihad with the Babylonian Empire and become faithful to that king. And yet, these boys out of the southern kingdom knew, because of the prophecies of Jeremiah that was going on there in that year, and other prophets that were speaking of Hosea and Amos and all, Ezekiel, they all know that, Ezekiel's not come yet, but they all know that God has brought the downfall of the southern kingdom because of the sinfulness of the people, and yet they will accept it. So back in chapter 1 of Daniel, verses 1 through 16, talk about Daniel going over with Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and the king offers them all this wonderful food from his table, meat that has been offered to idols, all the meat that's got to be eaten up, and wine in bountiful amounts that can be drunk by them, and all the food that they can use. And Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego go to the leader who is over them and say, listen, we do not want to eat the meat and the food that's being offered by the king. We would like to do something different. They do it in a very delicate and a very distinctive way so as not to offend. And this leader over them says, wait a minute, I cannot have you eat just vegetables like you're asking, because what will happen if the king looks at you four boys and you look so haggard instead of the way that the other young men look? And so Daniel asked the leader to allow them just to try it for 10 days and then to compare their skin color, their hair color, and everything about them. And lo and behold, after it's all said and done, at the end of 10 days of just eating vegetables and water, Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego look far better than the rest of the boys. And so the diet is changed for all, and the year goes through of them in training. And finally, we come up to the second year. which is where we pick up here in chapter 2, verse 1. And it says, "Now in the second year of the reign of Nebuchadnezzar, Nebuchadnezzar had a dream, and his spirit was troubled, and his sleep left him." He was troubled by this dream that he saw in his while he was asleep, and he was troubled. Sleep left him. Y'all have all had dreams like that where you woke up and you could not go to sleep because of what you had just experienced in the night. You've laid there and you've looked at the ceiling and you've run your head back and forwards and you've wondered, what in the world did that mean? Going on, he says, "The king gave orders to call in the magicians, the conjurers, the sorcerers, and the Chaldeans to tell the king his dreams. So they came in and stood before him, before the king." All right. So let's say I am Nebuchadnezzar and you are my magicians, my conjurers, my sorcerers, and my Chaldeans, and you have come in to stand before me, all of you. You're the wisest men in the entire kingdom, and you have come to stand before me. Those of you who are magicians, you are the ones who devise the horoscopes. Yes, you look at the stars, and you decide the future of those depending on, in the kingdom, depending on what their birth date would have been according to the stars and according to other things. If you are a conjurer, you're the one who practice enchantments. You know, you say these rhyming things that were supposed to cause things to happen to you. If you're a sorcerer, you're one who whispers spells, that you conjure up things by whispering spells and practicing witchcraft, of grabbing a hair of this and a toe of that and putting it into a cauldron and boiling it up and taking the entrails of animals that have been killed by you and laying them out and looking and telling the future by what is happening. That's what the sorcerers do. The Chaldeans, they were the teachers who did all of these three, who taught all these three different disciplines. And so the Chaldeans are these leading men who are the teachers in this context. And so these four groups, which you are going to represent in this classroom today, are standing before Nebuchadnezzar. And Nebuchadnezzar has given them a command. And when they come, for them to come. And when they get there, in verse 3, he says to them, "As I will say to you," Nebuchadnezzar, play like I'm Nebuchadnezzar, says to them, "I had a dream, and my spirit is anxious to understand the dream." Now, they are looking at him, they are noticing him, and probably if you were the person, a wise person that you are, standing there, you are thinking to yourself, "Oh, this is going to be a piece of cake. He's going to tell us what the dream is, and then we'll just be able to make something up and tell him what it means." Nebuchadnezzar says, "I have a dream, and I am anxious about it." I was really interested in the word anxious because it's a Hebrew word, and it actually ties up lots of different English feelings in one word, the word anxious. It means that we are worried, we're fearful, we're concerned, we are uneasy, we're fretful, we're apprehensive, all rolled into that one word, anxious. Now, every one of us in this room is old enough to have lived long enough to be anxious like that about something. We're fearful. We are worried. We are apprehensive. We are concerned. We're uneasy. We have all lived to be in that state. Nebuchadnezzar is there, and he is anxious about what his dream held for the future. So the Chaldeans, this is what you said back to Nebuchadnezzar in Aramaic, if I'm using you as the example. You say, "O king, live forever." O king, that's a pledge. That's a pledge or an oath that every nation of every kind made to their gods, maybe not the true God, but their gods, about their kings or their queens. Interesting, in English history, when the king died, the people would say, "The king is dead. Long live the new king," or "long live the king," or they'd say, "long live the queen." And what they would do is when the king died, they would take the ring off of his finger and say, "The king is dead," or "the queen is dead." And they would place it on the finger of the new queen saying, or the new king saying, "long live the king," or "long live the queen." It's the pledge or the oath. And so here we hear it where they say, O king, live forever. Tell the dream to your servants, and we will declare the interpretation. Tell us what you're talking about. Tell us what the dream was, and we'll be happy, just really happy, to tell you what the interpretation is. Oh, you folks. You remember he said, come and tell me what the dream was and tell me the interpretation. And so you, in your simple state of thinking that everything is still fine between you and the king, you reply to the king, tell me what the dream was and I'll tell you what it is because we'll be able to make something up. That's what you're thinking. Verse 5. The king answered and said to the Chaldeans, the command from me is firm. If you do not make known to me the dream and its interpretation, you will be torn limb from limb, and your houses will be made a rubbish heap. Huh. Well, that's pretty motivating, isn't it? Okay. You just asked me to tell you my dream after I told you I wanted you to tell me my dream. And so you're buying time here. You say, you tell us the dream and we'll be able to. And I've come back to you as the king and said, no, you're going to tell me the dream. And if you can't tell me the dream, I'm going to tear you limb from limb. And I'm going to take your house, and that means everybody inside the house, and we're going to make a rubbish heap out of it. Well, that's pretty stiff. But Nebuchadnezzar goes on in his encouraging words and says, verse 6, but if you declare the dream and its interpretation, you will receive from me gifts and a reward and great power. Therefore, declare to me the dream and its interpretation. In other words, okay, I had a dream last night. Every one of you who can tell me what the dream was and its interpretation, I am going to lavish upon you wealth beyond your expectations, wealth beyond your imagination. I'm going to give you gifts and things that you never thought possible. But if you cannot give me my answer, I'm going to tear every one of you apart limb by limb. Now, he is, the Chaldeans, the magicians, the conjurers, all the wise men. And by the way, we're going to find out in just a second, it just doesn't just apply to those who shows up. Those who show up hear the word. Those who didn't show up are going to be part of the slaughter if they cannot answer him. Well, they answered him a second time. How dare you come back and ask Nebuchadnezzar a second time this question? Let the king tell the dream to his servants, and we will declare the interpretation. Second time, tell us the dream, and we'll tell you the interpretation. Oh, you know, sometimes it's not good to question the boss a second time after he says, my command is firm. My command is going to stay in place. Here he says, the king answered and said, I know for certain that you are bargaining for time, inasmuch as you have seen the command from me is firm, that if you do not make the dream known to me, there is only one decree for you. For you have agreed together to speak lying and corrupt words before me until the situation is changed. Therefore, tell me the dream that I may know that you can declare it to me, its interpretation. Now, I'm sure after the very first time that the Chaldeans, the magicians, the conjurers, and the sorcerers said, Nebuchadnezzar, tell us what your dream is. When he says, no, I'm not going to tell you that. And if you don't tell me, I'm going to tear you limb from limb. A lot of this went on. Nebuchadnezzar saw it going on. That's the reason why he says here, I tell you, you're bargaining for time. You want me to tell you something that will allow you to know what I dreamed about. Okay. All you folks here are real smart. You're the wisest people I know because you're in this class. I love the way some of y'all take my lessons every week. You follow it with me in class. And on the way out, you throw it back in the pile. It's okay. It really is okay. It really is. Doesn't bother me a bit. It really does. I'm just thankful that you're here. It's the ones you throw in the trash. That bothers me. Was it trash? Or are you just done with it? That doesn't bother me either. Because you heard the message and you're here. That's what's important. So I had a dream last night. I really had a dream. The dream lasted about 2.5 hours. And then I woke up at 3:15, the exact time Madison used to always kick her mama when she was in the womb. And her mama would wake me up. Oh, Madison's kicking, you know. So all these 16 years since Madison's been here, you can set your clock by me waking up at 3:15. I still do. Wake up. I had a dream last night before 3:15. Somebody tell me what my dream was about. No. 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 If some of you do not come up with the answer, I'm going to have you torn limb from limb. And your houses will be reduced to... Okay, somebody tell me what my dream was about. No. I can tell y'all are just... I can tell that y'all are just bargaining for time and trying to get me to tell you something that will allow you to make... Yes, sir, what do you think it is? No, I did not, no. No. He said, I dreamed that Obama won. No, I have not. I am not worried about that whatsoever. Yes, ma'am. About the homeless people. No, I don't dream about homeless people. No. Yes, ma'am. That's no, I wouldn't. That's not it either. But thank you. That was a good one. Okay, enough of that. None of you hit the what I dreamed about. None of you. What I dreamed? I dreamed about flying. Because I want to fly again. I have 1,300 hours in an airplane. I'd love to fly again. That's what. But none of y'all got that. See, I had to tell you. How many of y'all have ever gone to a faith healing service at a church where the pastor gets up and says, God is telling me that there's somebody here that's got a bad back problem? Okay. Now, folks, let me tell you how this operates. It has been going on for centuries. For centuries, people would gather into outside the tent. I'll just go back to the days of the 1800s. When they'd gather, the tent would come to town, and everybody would go because there's nothing else to do. There's no television, you know. Nothing else to do except go to the local saloon or whatever. So the church folks would go out to the tent. You wouldn't see the preacher out there because he's not going to be out there because he's going to be hidden away someplace. But his people are out there and they're gathering around and everybody's talking. And notes are being made, but you don't realize notes are being made. And so then there's a little conference time back with the preacher before he starts preaching. One of the little people out there that you don't even know, you're just talking, you don't even know that he's really with the preacher, and you're the little lady with a red hat on and a black dress and a little feather sticking up. So, and you got a leg problem. It's just giving you in your sacroiliac. It's just giving you some problems. But you're doing better today. So you go in and sit down and you sing those wonderful songs. On Jordan, stormy banks I stand. And over here, there's another man that's coming in, and he's got him an old stick that he's carrying with him because he's got to walk with the stick, and he's got a back problem back in his back, and it just hurts. And they've been putting mustard all over it, trying to get it to help a little bit, and rubbing some kerosene oil on it to also try to help. Lo and behold, after all the singing, you get right into the service, and the preacher preaches a little bit, and then he says, oh, God is telling me, Oh, it just hit me. There's a woman here with a red hat, a little feather coming out of it. She's got a problem going down in her leg. Oh, wait a minute. Sacroiliac. Is there a woman here? Yes, there she is right there. Oh, yes. Lady, you can come right here. And then the healing service starts. Now, over the years with electronics, people like Peter Popoff out of Dallas and others have been, and Robert Tilton have been using the same tactic, except for now they have electronic things in their ears, and the people have got little microphones on, and so they're out there and they're moseying around, and people are filling out prayer cards and with their names. And so now the preachers can have their wives back in the back reading a prayer card. Says, okay, on the third row, the fourth person back, he's got a blue tie on. He's got a problem with pancreatic cancer. Oh, God, I've just got a message from God right now. Sir, you right there, the fourth row, the third row back. Yeah. God's told me you got a problem with pancreatic cancer. We call it charlatanism. That's what it's called. These are charlats. These are men. Listen, you want to know how to do this? They've been doing this type of magic since the days of Abraham. Go to your local libraries and check out a book on psychic magic. All the tricks are there. There's a magician by the name of Randy. He used to be called. He was a very good magician by the name. He went by the name Amazing Randy. He got so fed up with these religious charlatans that he made it his life goal to go in and to catch them in the act. Because you see, all the minister has to know is one little detail or maybe two, and he says it to you, and you think God has spoken through him. Nebuchadnezzar knew better than this, because he knew if he let out one single word, because remember, Nebuchadnezzar came long after Abraham, and these magicians have been doing these tricks for long, long times, the same psychic type of stuff. If he let out one little word, they would be able to conjure up something that would be close to what he had dreamed about. Nebuchadnezzar says, I know that you've been trying to bargain for time. You either give me the decree, I have decreed to you, you either tell me what I dreamed about and its interpretation, or you're done for. Verse 10, these charlatans, these Chaldeans answered the king and said, there is not a man on earth who could declare the matter for the king inasmuch as no great king or ruler has ever asked anything like this of any magician, conjurer, or Chaldean. Moreover, the thing which the king demands is difficult, and there is no one else who could declare it to the king except gods, whose dwelling place is not with mortal flesh. King, what you've asked for, no one else has ever asked a king for anything like this. Now, I don't believe that's a true statement. First of all, it's coming from the Chaldeans, and they're liars, and they're corrupt. Second of all, I don't think any king, there's been other kings. I do believe that there's been other kings who have tried to do such a thing to other kings and other men and ask for information that they know that they cannot give. Well, these Chaldeans say, look, there's no one out there except the gods who can know these things. They don't even know the true God. They just say, hey, there's no one else. There's no one but a God that can do this. Well, Nebuchadnezzar does not fall for their excuse. Verse 12, because of this, the king became indignant and very furious and gave orders to destroy all the wise men of Babylon. Not just you folks, you wise folks sitting in front of me, not just you, but all the wise men of Babylon. That means everybody standing in front of Nebuchadnezzar and all the rest of those in training also. All the wise men. So the decree went out, verse 13, forth, and that the wise men should be slain, and they looked for Daniel and his friends to kill them. What in the world is Daniel involved in this for? He's just a Jewish boy over from the southern kingdom that got picked up by Nebuchadnezzar and put into a 3-year training program. And also over there, the Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. What did they do? They weren't even standing before Nebuchadnezzar. They're just over there training and trying to get ready to be going to to Nebuchadnezzar's service as one of these Chaldeans or magicians or sorcerers or conjurers or whatever, and they're learning the Chaldean language. They speak Hebrew, and they've only been doing it for a year. This is the second year.
How many men are we talking about?
are you talking about? Hundreds of hundreds. Yes. Well, verse 14. Then Daniel replied with discretion and discernment. Daniel is awfully good at this. He did it in chapter 1 when he was a year younger, and now he's 16, 17, 18 years old. He comes up to the man who's in charge of slaying all the wise men, and he asks him a question very carefully. He goes up to the captain of the bodyguard who has gone forth to slay the wise men of Babylon. I wonder, my wonderment is how many are already dead by the time they get to Daniel. I do not know that answer. And he answered and said to Arioch, the king's commander, "For what reason is the decree from the king so urgent?" Then Arioch informed Daniel about the matter. What's the hurry? What's the rush? Why are we rushing up? Why are we doing this? You know, I have been asked to be on different boards and on different committees in my life. And it seems that every time my term is up, I never get asked again to stay on. And here's the reason why. Because I'm the one that says, "Who told you that? Where'd you get that information? How do you know that to be true? Is that the facts? Or is that not the facts? Is that a lie? What's your source?" No, that's a third source. That's hearsay. What's the original source? Tell me who the original source is, and if you will not go and talk to them, I will be glad to go talk to them and find out what the truth is and bring them here or whatever. So consequently, I only serve one board, and now I don't get asked to serve on anything anymore. My reputation is out. My brother-in-law says it's the voice of reason, because I'm always the one saying, "You're going to do what and when and why? For what reason?" Do you not ask those types of questions? People come into my office all the time. "I need this because I need this, and I just got to have this." Why? Because I got to stay connected. If my phone gets cut off, I don't know what I'm going to do. I may die. Excuse me? Your phone is running your heartbeat? Your phone is putting food in your stomach? "Oh, but I'm waiting on this call back for a job, and I can't get my phone turned off." Okay, so how much is your phone bill? $187. Excuse me? What all do you have on that phone? "Well, I've got the internet." Okay, can we turn that off? No. I tell you what, if we can turn it off, I'll even pay the turnoff fee to turn it off. By the way, you know how much that usually is? A lot. It's $300 on most plans. Do you know I have yet to see anybody that is willing to allow me to pay their phone bill and turn off the internet stuff along with it? Because then they will be disconnected from the world where they can't search for stuff. And most of it is gobbledygook anyway. By the way, if you take any of your resources from Wikipedia and expect it to be truth, you are probably perpetuating a lie. Because I keep going there and saying, "Oh no, whoever wrote this is rewriting history." Because there's little truth there. Well, that was extra. That wasn't even part of the lesson. So Daniel went in and he requested the king that he would give him time in order that he might declare the interpretation to the king. Now, we don't know whether Daniel has had a conversation to the king to this point. He's been in his presence a year. Yeah, probably he's sat in front of him sometime during the year. Probably he's eaten around him sometime during the year. But has he had a conversation with Nebuchadnezzar? We don't know that. But for some reason, whatever reason, this commander takes a chance and takes Daniel to the king, and Daniel says to Nebuchadnezzar, "Nebuchadnezzar, if you'll give me just a little bit of time, I will come back and I'll tell you what you're asking.
You never show this side of the room.
So, I never show that side of the room. Daniel talking to Nebuchadnezzar. Please pardon me, for I have sinned already since noon by not showing you the flannel board on wood. Please. Now, I do not know why Nebuchadnezzar allowed him some time. And how much time does he give him? Does he also let Arioch off the hook from killing the Chaldeans? We don't know that. Man, there's just lots of things we don't know about this in the scripture. Well, anyway, Daniel is worried because, you see, not only are they coming after the Chaldeans, they're coming after the sons of Israel, because Daniel is one of those sons of Israel that's mentioned back over in chapter 1. They're all the sons of Israel who are there learning to work in the king's court. Then Daniel went to his house and informed his friends, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, about the matter. We know those three boys by another set of names. This is their Hebrew names. Their Chaldean names are Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. David. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Now for the rest of you. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and Daniel's in the middle. At least in my mind they are.
I've got some visitors in there.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, okay. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Preschool never was this hard before. Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah are their Hebrew names. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego are their Chaldean or Babylonian names. Now, for all time, we know Daniel by his Hebrew name. We never call him by his Babylonian name, but we're fixing to find out his Babylonian name is Belteshazzar. Well, he goes and he goes to the house and he informs his three friends, his closest three friends, about what has transpired. He's been to the king. He's asked for some time. Verse 18, in order that they might request compassion from the God of heaven concerning this mystery. So they're asking the God of heaven, that's the first thing they do, to reveal to them this mystery so that Daniel and his friends might not be destroyed with the rest of the wise men of Babylon. Two requests. God, tell us what is going on and what we need to know for number two so we won't die. There is a sense of urgency now in Daniel that he needs to know because they're going to die. Evidently, just reading into the passage, there must be many of the wise men in Chaldeans who have already lost their life because they did not answer. And the word has gotten down to Daniel and his three friends, and they're asking God for time. Verse 19. Then the mystery was revealed to Daniel in a night vision. A night vision. That means he was doing what most of you do a lot. When your retirement program went in half, you laid on your bed, looked at the ceiling, and thought, oh, God, what are we going to do? We're going to have to sell the house because we can't pay the taxes now. Where's our money gone? Or when you heard word about what your wayward college boy is doing, oh, my Lord Jesus Christ, please help me know what to say. And you're just all night, you're looking at the ceiling into the dark. Dreams are what you do when you're asleep. Night visions are what you see when you're awake. Day visions are what you see when you're awake. Day dreams are what you see when you're awake. Burdens or oracles are what God tells you directly to say. That's the three types of things we have in the Old Testament. We have oracles, word for word. Jeremiah, tell these people this and don't miss a word. Repeat after me. Visions. Daniel, Jeremiah, Ezekiel, Haggai, Zechariah, Amos, Obadiah. I'm going to show you a picture and you tell it in your own words to the people. Daniel, in your dream, I'm going to show you in the dream what happens. And when you wake up, tell it in your own words. One's when you're asleep and one's when you're awake. Here, he's awake. I'd probably be awake too if I just figured out that I'm fixing to die if I don't get an answer from God. Then Daniel blessed the God of heaven, and Daniel answered and said, because he knows now, he's been revealed to him. He has seen the dream that Nebuchadnezzar saw. Daniel answered and said, let the name of God be blessed forever and ever, for wisdom and power belong to him. And it is he who changes the times and the epochs. He removes kings and establishes kings. He gives wisdom to wise men and knowledge to men of understanding. It is he who reveals the profound and hidden things. Believe me, Nebuchadnezzar's dream is a profound and hidden thing. He knows what is in the darkness, and the light dwells with him. To thee, O God of my fathers, I give thanks and praise, for thou hast given me wisdom and power. Even now thou hast made known to me what we requested of thee. Thou hast made known to us the king's matter. Folks, when God gives you an answer, don't forget to thank him for it. Everyone in this room has had some problem that you have laid on your bed at night, and you've worried and worried and worried, and sometime during the night or that night or the next night or whatever, it clicked. I know what I'll do. I know what I'm supposed to do. When that happens, give God the glory. Praise him and bless him for the understanding that he has given to you. Aha. It's an aha moment. Aha. Daniel had that moment because he knew what the dream of the king's matter was. Perhaps that's the reason why back the unknown recorder who records all these things that Daniel has told him back in 1:17 says this about Daniel and the three youth. He says, as for these four youth, God gave them understanding and intelligence in every branch of literature and wisdom, and Daniel even understood all kinds of visions and dreams. Daniel 1:17. Yeah, Daniel's got it. He's got it. Therefore, Daniel went to Arioch, whom the king had appointed to destroy all the wise men of Babylon, and he went and spoke to him as follows. Arioch, do not destroy the wise men of Babylon. Who's giving the orders here? I thought Nebuchadnezzar gave the order. Kill them. I was wondering, did Arioch not stop killing the wise men while the sons of Israel, those Jewish boys who were in the training school or trying to find out an answer for a short period of time? We don't know those answers. Those are just questions I have in my mind that I see from these. We don't know, but he says, do not destroy the wise men of Babylon. Take me into the king's presence, and I will declare the interpretation to the king. Take me. Arioch, I know. Well, what does Arioch do? This is what he does. Then Arioch hurriedly brought Daniel into the king's presence and spoke to him as follows. I have found, Arioch says to Nebuchadnezzar, Nebuchadnezzar, I have found a man among the exiles from Judah who can make the interpretation known to the king. Arioch wants to make sure that the king knows that he's been a part of this. My question is did Daniel tell Arioch ahead of time what the interpretation was? I don't think so. I think this is blind faith from Arioch in a young man, because Arioch does not want to kill any of the rest of these Chaldeans. The wise men, Arioch does not want to kill these sons of Israel either, because Arioch has grown fond of them, as we saw back in chapter 1. Then the king answered and said to Daniel, whose name was Belteshazzar, are you able to make known to me the dream which I have seen and its interpretation? Now, if Daniel was from Texas, he would have said this, you bet. But before Daniel answers, he's going to give a witness to the true God. Before he tells him the dream, he's going to witness to Nebuchadnezzar about the true God. Before he gives the interpretation, he is going to witness to Nebuchadnezzar about the true God. Daniel answered the king and said, as for the mystery about which the king has inquired, neither wise men, conjurers, magicians, nor diviners are able to declare it to the king. However, there is a God in heaven who reveals mysteries, and he has made known to King Nebuchadnezzar what will take place in the latter days. He's made known to Nebuchadnezzar, these are the things that are going to take place in the latter days. After you, Nebuchadnezzar, this was your dream, and the vision is in your mind while you laid on your bed. So he gives praise to the God of heaven, and then he says, here's the dream. Let's read the dream in its entirety. As for you, O king, while on your bed, your thoughts turn to what would take place in the future. And he who revealed mysteries has made known to you what will take place. As for me, this mystery has not been revealed to me for any wisdom residing in me more than in any other living man. I have not received this vision so that I can know it any more than any other living man, because this vision is for you, Nebuchadnezzar, but for the purpose of making the interpretation known to the king and that you may understand the thoughts of your mind. This interpretation of what I'm about to tell you is for you, Nebuchadnezzar. It is for your edification. It is for your benefit. But I tell you what, those of us who have studied Daniel through the years, we sure have been blessed by it. You, O king, were looking, and behold, there was a single great statue. I got to get my statue. There was a single great statue. David, it's a statue, okay? Single great statue. The statue, which was large and extraordinary splendor, was standing in front of you, and it appeared, and its appearance was awesome. And the head of the statue was made of fine gold, its breast and its arms of silver, its belly and its thighs of bronze, its legs of iron, its feet partly of iron and partly of clay. You continued looking until a stone was cut out without hands, and it struck the statue on its feet of iron and clay and crushed them. Then the iron, the clay, the bronze, the silver, and the gold were crushed all at the same time and became like chaff for the summer threshing floor, and the wind carried them away so that not a trace of them was found. But the stone that struck the statue became a great mountain and filled the whole earth. This was the dream. Now we shall tell its interpretation before the king. Here's the dream. There you got it. Oh, my soul, look what happens. First of all, if I was the king, I'd be astonished that he just told me. See, none of y'all could tell me what my dream was about last night. And here Daniel is coming for Nebuchadnezzar and told him the entire dream. I'm sure Nebuchadnezzar is astonished at what is being told to him. You, O king, are the king of kings, to whom the God of heavens has given the kingdom, the power, and the strength, and the glory. And wherever the sons of men dwell, or the beasts of the field, or the birds of the sky, he has given them into your hand and has caused you to rule over them. You are the head of gold. Nebuchadnezzar, you're the head of gold. And wherever you go, and whatever you do, and whatever is in your sight, the land, the people, the birds, the animals, or whatever, they all belong to you because God has given them to you. You are the head of gold. Going on. By the way, the head of gold today has already been fulfilled. Nebuchadnezzar has gone. The kingdom is gone. This goes on. Verse 39 says, and after you, there will be arise another kingdom inferior to you, then another third kingdom of bronze, which will rule over the earth. Okay, now he doesn't tell us what the interpretation, he tells us this interpretation, but he's taking it up from the top. He doesn't tell us it's gold and silver about the second kingdom, but the second kingdom is the arms and the torso part, the chest of silver. One arm is the Medes. The other arm is the Persians. Therefore, we have the Medes and the Persians who come in. They come in 536 BC and overthrow the Babylonian Empire, and the Persian Empire comes into being. Then another empire comes, inferior even to the gold, which is inferior, even to the silver, which is inferior to the gold. And in 333 BC, Alexander the Great comes with his Greeks, and they overthrow the Persian Empire, and the Bronze Empire begins. He goes on to say, and then, after there will arise, the third kingdom is of bronze, and it will rule over the earth. Now we turn to the next page. It says, then there will be a fourth kingdom as strong as iron, in as much as iron crushes and scatters all things, so like iron that breaks in pieces, it will crush and break all these in pieces. So along will come this iron section. The iron section comes in 62 BC with the Roman Empire that overthrows the Greek Empire, that overthrows the Persian Empire, that's overthrown the Babylonian Empire. And on that, there will be two legs. In fact, that's what exactly what happens. Verse 41. And in that you saw that the feet of and toes were partially of potter's clay and partially of iron, it will be a divided kingdom with two legs. That's the kingdom of iron, but it will have in it the toughness of iron, inasmuch as you saw the iron mixed with common clay. Sure enough, in 286 AD, the Caesar at that point in time divides the kingdoms because he's worried about the Germanic people to the north and the Persian people who have reestablished themselves as a force to the east. The next Caesar who comes along, in fact, it is Constantine, pulls the entire kingdom back together, and it is one, and he is made the Holy Roman Emperor. When he dies, the next Caesar that comes along then divides the kingdom again, and he puts his two sons as the head of the West. One of the sons is the head of the West. The other son is the head of the East. One is over Rome, and the other is over Constantinople, but this Caesar is the head of both. And thus, in 395 B.C., the legs are totally formed of this Roman Empire. Then the toes are formed, Daniel 2:42. And as the toes of the feet were partially of iron and partly of pottery, so some of the kingdom will be strong and part of it will be brittle. And in that you saw the iron mixed with common clay, they will combine with one another in the seed of men. They will combine, they will come back together, and in them will come a seed of this of the men of this area that's formed back by these 10 toes, but they will not adhere to one another, even as clay does not combine with pottery. Well, in 476 AD, the Western Empire fell to the Germanic people that they were afraid of to the north. In the Germans' infinite wisdom, they divided the land that they had taken into five toes. Those five toes are Britain, Spain, France, Italy, and North Africa. 1,000 years after that, in 1453, the Muslim Turks overran the Byzantine Empire with the destruction of Constantinople, which was the capital. And in the Muslims' infinite wisdom, they divided the land of the Eastern Empire into five states, five countries: Macedonia, Greece, Turkey, Syria, and Egypt. So there we have the 10 toes. These 10 toes, all of this has been fulfilled, and the 10 toes have been created. That's fulfilled. The thing that is not fulfilled yet is those 10 toes must come back together and form a nation. It will not include Germany. It will not include Russia. It will not include Ethiopia. It will not include Switzerland. It will not include Belgium. It will not, and I can just go on and on of who it will not include. It will not include Ireland. It will only include the mainland portion of the British Isles. It will only take that big chunk of England that we know, not the other chunk that's out there, the other island that's out there. They will join back together in time, and they will form a union together, and they will be strong, but they will also be very weak and be very brittle, in that iron is strong and clay is very weak. Well, and in the days of those kings, when these toes come back together, when these kings come back together, these 10 kings join together, the God of heaven will set up a kingdom which will never be destroyed. This is when the Lord is going to return. And that kingdom will not be left for another people. No kingdom will overrun God's kingdom when he sets it up here on earth. It'll be the last kingdom. It will crush and put an end to all these kingdoms, but it will itself endure forever. That is the kingdom of the stone that is cut without hands. The stone that the builder rejected is the way it's put another way. That is the stone of Jesus Christ that will come and crush all the world and all the evil. Inasmuch as you saw that a stone was cut out of the mountain without hands, and that it crushed the iron, the bronze, the clay, the silver, and the gold, the great God has made known to the king what will take place in the future, so that the dream is true and its interpretation is trustworthy. Oh, my soul. Well, if I was Nebuchadnezzar, Nebuchadnezzar, with three Hebrew boys standing in front of me, and these boys have just revealed to me the dream, just that amount of it, and now they've told me the interpretation about what's going to happen in the future, I believe I would be somewhat numb. I think you would be too. The king, Nebuchadnezzar, verse 46, fell on his face. The king, Nebuchadnezzar, the greatest king ever, falls on his face before four Hebrew boys. Doesn't God have a wonderful sense of humor? And did homage to Daniel and gave orders to present him an offering and fragrant incense. And the king answered Daniel and said, surely your God is a God of gods and a Lord of kings and a revealer of mysteries, since you have been able to reveal this mystery. Your God's it. Now he's going to have to be reminded of that in the next chapter, with Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego, and the fiery furnace. Then he's going to have to be reminded of that again whenever he has a dream about a tree and the Lord ends up sending him out to live like an animal for 7 years. But that message is going to make it home to Nebuchadnezzar. Your God is a God of gods. Verse 48. Then the king promoted Daniel and gave him many great gifts and made him ruler over the whole province of Babylon and chief prefect over the wise men of Babylon. And Daniel, Okay, let's see here. Mr. Finley, how old are you? Oh, you're too old. Do we have anybody else in here younger? How old are you, Mr. Kennedy? No, the young one, not you. You're too old. 16. You're probably about the right age. Maybe a year from this. Can you imagine that at your age? I got to show it over here first. Nebuchadnezzar. This man bows at your feet. He has conquered the entire world and he says, I want you to be second in charge of my entire kingdom. You don't think the gray-haired man in front of you would be saying, what in the world? In front of you, not behind you. Might not say, I voted for you yesterday, so yeah, I can say this, okay? You're sure these people around are going, what makes him so special? He just told him the dream. He doesn't have any experience. He doesn't know what he's doing. I mean, he can eat vegetables really well and drink water. What else have we seen him do? What else? Why in the world is Nebuchadnezzar has placed this honor upon him, and I believe that was from God. Never, never, ever discourage young men who come into leadership positions, folks, because they may be put there by God, and there are some really good men who are young. Never despise the youth, the scripture says, because God will use them for things that you and I cannot do. And Daniel made a request to the king, and he appointed Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego over the administration of the provinces of Babylon while Daniel was at the king's court. Daniel needed help and he pulled his three friends along. He made them his inner cabinet in charge. Three young boys. Visual here. Four Jewish boys, young boys, are now in control of the Babylonian kingdom. What they say is virtually what the king has said, whether the king ever opened his mouth or not. They are in charge. Now, if you do not think that is a God thing, you got problems, because that's a God thing. Well, Daniel will go on. and he will serve faithfully in the king's court. And he'll serve through the Persians all the way down to the third king of the Persian Empire. Lord Jesus, we thank you for the message of the life of Daniel. We thank you for this statue of gold that we keep looking at and we keep waiting, because all of it's been fulfilled except for those 10 countries coming back together. And we look anxiously for that to happen in our future. Those of us who know the scripture, you've told us that those of us who know that will know the signs when we see it happen. Well, it hadn't happened yet, but we keep waiting for that. Because we know that if you have fulfilled everything else over the hundreds of years, there's no reason why that you will not fulfill the rest of your promises that come to us through Daniel. Lord, blessings to you for being a God who reveals mysteries and gives us understanding and interpretation of those things that are in your word. In your name, amen.